time, we ask anybody to come forward to make a comment under the public comment period, and this is an opportunity to speak on any item that is not on today's agenda. We do ask that if you would like to comment on any item that's on today's agenda, or not on today's agenda, that you fill out a request to speak form and bring it forward to the Planning Commission Secretary. I do have one person that would like to speak at this time under public comment, and that's Eric Greening.
Good morning. I'm Eric Greening. Happy spring. And I do have a couple of questions that hopefully can be handled in planning staff updates. First, I should say that the road abandonment issue in Los Osos that got extensive Planning Commission discussion twice was approved by the county supervisors Tuesday. I had a problem with the fact that neither of the meetings where you had a discussion were those minutes in the supervisor's packet, so they did not actually know what was discussed or what is at stake. I had actually, when they were setting the hearing 2 weeks previous, requested that those minutes be sought and included in the record so that the Board of Supervisors would know what was discussed and what issues had surfaced. My question on this issue is, whose responsibility is it to see that Planning Commission minutes get in their packet? I had sort of assumed it was something that from their end they would know to seek them and put them in there as they are assembling the packet. But if there's a responsibility at the planning end of it, then I would certainly like to know that and to know that it's going to happen, because when you do have discussions, the substance of those discussions is very, very important for the supervisors to know about. Otherwise, why would you have them? The second question I have, shifting gears, but still in that same geographical area, it's been quite some time now, like maybe 6 months or so, since the Estero Area Plan was sent to the Coastal Commission, along with five huge cardboard boxes full of materials that the Board of Supervisors, without seeing them, decided to take into the record. Given that, I can kind of understand why it's been eerily quiet for a while, but still, this is an area plan that presumably is being reviewed by the Coastal Commission, and at some point their staff would get back to us, schedule a Coastal Commission hearing, et cetera, et cetera. I have heard next to nothing, and my question is, have you? And what's next? I would presume they would come back with enough suggested changes that it's going to land in front of your commission again, but I don't know that, and so I just throw that question out there, partly just so that we all remember that there is an Estero area plan that is supposedly in process. Thank you.
Right. Any questions for Eric? Yeah. I have somebody who submitted a request to speak on TDC's Emily. And Emily, we don't have it on the agenda today, so I imagine you'd like to speak under public comment. Is that correct? Okay, please come forward and state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Emily Combs. I live at 64 Pozo Road. And I wanted to submit a letter today to you guys, but I'm just going to read it into the record as well. This is regarding a request for assistance in developing a community-based transfer of development credit program. I've worked with the Pozo Community Group. However, I do not represent the group formally in this request. As a resident of Pozo, I'm concerned about the potential implications of the 5-mile TDC circle around Pozo, as my home is in the middle of it and my community is affected by it. I'm not alone in my concern, and based on discussions with neighbors including Rhonda Rodenberger, owner of the Pozo Saloon, and Elizabeth Fadley, one of the Park Hill representatives for SMAC, Pozo is ready to work toward a community-based plan. The Creston Citizens for Agland Preservation is an inspirational force in ensuring that the TDC program will be utilized for the greatest good and that future use will stay in line with the original intent of the program. Following the Creston Group's lead, I would like to request that the Planning Commission and Planning Department assist us in establishing community-based TDC plans. I will be contacting residents of the Pozo neighborhood to establish a more formal group for this process before the April 14th Planning Commission meeting, which I believe it's on the agenda to discuss again then. From minutes of the February 9th, 2005 Santa Margarita Area Advisory Council meeting, it's my understanding that SMAC is drafting a similar letter to this, but I do not know if it's been sent to you yet. The full minutes are available on their website, but the specific motion was that SMAC agrees to have a letter sent to the Board of Supervisors and Planning Department to ask to give directions to SMAC, Creston and Pozo, on how to do a community-based TDC program. 8 were in favor, 5 opposed, and 3 abstained. I look forward to working together with you guys on this, and thank you for your time.
Great, thank you. Any questions?
Can city sort of offering advice about how to make decisions for brand new commissioners who maybe are just beginning their experience as planning commissioners for the cities. And then our afternoon program will be Paul Zykowski from the Local Government Commission, and he'll be talking smart growth issues as well as affordable housing. And so we hope you'll be able to attend if you'll let Lona know so that we can plan for you. And as part of that, we'll also have a speaker to talk about the Brown Act and what it means to you as commissioners. And we've purchased the user's guides to the Brown Act for each of the commissioners, so I want to distribute those to you, sort of an update of information from the state on the Brown Act. And there have been some changes in terms of Brown Act responsibility, so we wanted to make sure the commission had access to information, and we'll be talking about it further at the Planning Commissioner's Training. In the future, we're also working. Cal Poly is trying to bring in Stefan Polozoides and Rick Cole to come forward and talk design issues and continue discussion about smart growth principles in planning. We don't have a date for those yet. It'll be after the April 9th meeting, but we'll get that information out to you as soon as possible. In response to a couple of comments from Eric Greening, I did call Tim Smith, and Tim Smith indicates that the Planning Commission minutes have never been a part of road abandonments, and I asked him if there's any problem with them being included, and we will do some follow-up with him in terms of how to make that happen. I don't recall how the discussion went at the commission. Eric indicated that he had requested that. I don't recall how that occurred because I wasn't there for that particular item. The second question had to do with the Estero update, and I contacted Mike Wolken. The Estero update actually went to the Coastal Commission on December 31st, so the board acted sooner, but putting together the entire many boxes of public record takes quite a bit of time. We've been in a number of discussions with them. They asked for some additional materials and documentation, and we have provided that to them. And they indicated initially that they wanted to see the Habitat Conservation Plan completed before they take up the plan. We've asked them to consider not doing that and to proceed before the Habitat Conservation Plan is actually completed. Mike indicates that we've gotten nothing further from them since around February, so that's where we're at in the discussions with them.
And Pat, my understanding is the HCP is just beginning to be formulated, is that correct?
They've been working on it for probably almost a year. Maybe Matt knows a little bit more. I wish Ellen were here because she's been the one attending.
Good morning, Matt Jansen, planning staff. Yeah, the HCP has been, the community-wide HCP for Los Osos has been under production for probably closer to 3 years. The last year has been a concentrated effort. There was a draft as of last month, and we expect another draft probably in another 6 weeks because all the agencies are commenting on it right now.
Thank you.
Going back to your Eric's item, I understood his question to be larger than just road abandonment. When the Planning Commission has some discussions, who decides and if it would or would not be appropriate to send our discussion on forward. When before you answer that, I recognize that it's part of my job is, you know, being appointed by a supervisor to go have discussions with him periodically if I think it's important that he have a perspective of what we discussed at the Planning Commission. So that's one way it gets done, and I do that regularly.
Well, I will say that when an item is going to the board either on appeal of your action, where you are the decision maker, but someone has elected to appeal that, or when it's a legislative act that you're making a recommendation to the board, we as a department do include that background information, and the board has requested it on our items. It just has never come up again with regards to road abandonments, and typically there really isn't a lengthy discussion, so it's not typically been something that we've had a lot of dialogue about, making sure that those minutes are included. And I indicated to Tim that maybe we can do a follow-up discussion where there has been a lengthy discussion to provide that information.
I would just add that I don't think we have approved minutes for those meetings at this point to forward. So,
and maybe this was more important, more appropriate for a public comment, but I wish to report that I attended a conference in Sacramento about artificial. Do I have copies of it? Sure. Sure.
Anything else, Pat?
There was a comment on concerns about the TDC program and community-based interests. We have had some discussions about how to link up representatives from Napomo who did develop a regional, a community-based program with the other parts of the community that are beginning to express interest, and maybe looking at a workshop where we could have those representatives come forward. I don't know if Kemi has any additional information, or John Ufret.
Good morning, John Ufret, County Planning Staff. We are continuing to work on the idea, as Pat summarized it, and then we'll probably have a little more information for you at your next meeting, because we'll be reporting back. We continued our study session from several weeks ago to your next meeting, and so we'll have some information there. But that is our goal, and we've discussed it with the Templeton Advisory Committee as well as Santa Margarita, and so there's definitely interest, and there's a group in Creston as well that I think would all be willing to attend.
And unfortunately, the lady has left now, but I wanted to advise her that Templeton is in the middle of that project. They've started thinking about it perhaps a year ago, and now to the point where they're starting to put things to paper. And so
it's
good for those Santa Margarita and the Templeton groups to get together, because I'm sure they have some common issues that they could discuss.
No, absolutely. We want to build on that enthusiasm, and so we'll be there to help facilitate it.
Does that conclude planning staff date? Okay, great. Any other comments from the Planning Commission or questions? No. We'll next go on to our consent agenda. And do we have a motion on this item?
I'll so move the consent agenda.
Okay, do we have a second?
We need a public comment on it,
I don't have any request to pull the consent agenda off the agenda. Unless there's a request by a commissioner to pull the item, I don't have any request to pull it off. So, I have a second?
Yes.
Okay. Any discussion? No discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Consent agenda approved. We'll now go on to our public hearing item. Lona, could you please introduce the first item?
Hearing number one is a hearing to consider a request by Daniel Carzel for a conditional use permit to allow an expansion of an existing senior care facility from 6 to 12 residents in the agriculture land use category, El Pomar Estrella Planning Area, County File Number DRC 2004-00048, Supervisorial District 1. Josh LeBombard, Project Manager.
Good morning, Josh LeBombard, Planning Staff. Before you today is a request by Daniel Carzel for a conditional use permit to allow an expansion of an existing senior care facility from 6 to 12 residents. The expansion will take place internally, and the amount of disturbance that was in the project description was solely for paving for a driveway and parking spaces. The project is located at 4225 Camp 8 Road at the intersection with Highway 41. And it is in the agricultural land use category. Here's an aerial image of the property. This aerial image is showing a 16.3-acre parcel, which was the size of the parcel upon application. Since then, the 10 acres to the west has been sold, so it's now a 6.3-acre parcel, just to eliminate any confusion, because in the negative declaration it refers to a 16.3-acre, and in the staff report it says 6.3. Here's the site plan. The building is existing. It does house 6 residents to date. The request is to do an interior conversion to expand that to 12 residents. And planning's recommendation is that you adopt the negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of CEQA and approve. Oh, that says lot line adjustment. That's not supposed to say that. Conditional use permit listed in Exhibit A and Exhibit B.
Any questions for staff? Commissioner Rose?
Yeah, I had a couple. On the agency review, I see you referred it to Public Works, Ag Commissioner, CDF, Caltrans, City of Paso Robles, and then you have said that's Public Works recommended approval. Didn't get any comment from the other people, although Caltrans doesn't look like they're referred there. And I'm used to seeing those referrals in the staff report. Usually it just consists of the referral you sent them. They put their comments on and change the from twos around, and that you have mapped out certain areas that are 1-to-1 and certain areas that are 4-to-1 and various numbers in between. And is that the new policy?
I'm going to defer that question to Julie Lyson.
Julie Eliason, County Planning Staff. I'm sorry, I was on my way over here. Could you repeat the question?
Sure. The question was how we determine what sort of mitigation is required for the Kit Fox. And it used to be, at least the way I thought it was, is that we have this general map of the county says you can expect Kit Fox in this general vicinity, and therefore if a project came through, you sent out a biologist or the applicant hired a biologist on your list, and then he or she evaluated the situation and said that gave it a certain score, and then that was reviewed or peer-reviewed by Fish and Game, and they set the final score. And based on that score, I think it was on a 0 to 100 point scale, and the high numbers you had to do 4-to-1, the low numbers it was 1-to-1, and that's how we did it. And that seemed to make sense to me, because somebody went there and reviewed the terrain and said whatever they said. But now it looks like you're using some sort of map. And I went by the planning department the other day and I saw this map that you have certain areas that you're calling 4-to-1 and 3-to-1, 2-to-1, and like this area is called a 1-to-1 area. Have we changed?
We have changed in the respect that we have two options available. The results of numerous past habitat evaluations conducted by biologists have resulted in certain mitigation ratio areas for certain areas of the county. That's based on usually the proximity to recent Kit Fox sightings, the type of habitat, how the quality of the habitat for Kit Foxes, its area within the Kit Fox migration corridor area or habitat area. So based on these numerous habitat evaluations, we were able to come up with standard mitigation ratio areas for certain parts of the county. So most of the habitat evaluations for projects within those areas would come out as a 3-to-1 or a 2-to-1. And we worked with the Department of Fish and Game to establish those areas based on the habitat evaluations. And we made this available to applicants whose projects are less than 40 acres in size. So if a project comes in within the Kit Fox habitat area, it's less than 40 acres in size, and it falls within a certain standard mitigation ratio area, they have the option of accepting that standard mitigation ratio or hiring a biologist to go out and do a habitat evaluation. And in some cases, it may be to their advantage to get the habitat evaluation done because of the qualities of the project site may enable it to be a lower mitigation ratio. But we did this to try to expedite the process and to try to reduce costs to the applicants.
Okay, that helps. But you raise another question. Well, the applicant has the opportunity to go out and make his case for reducing it. But what about the other side of the coin? What if the environmental community thinks that this one-to-one area ought to be something larger than that? How do they get to do that?
Well, they always have the option to comment on projects through the public review process. And if there's some evidence to indicate that a project should be a higher ratio than what was indicated in the negative declaration, then we would look at that. But again, this is based on current information that we have on current Kitfox sightings. And it can change as we get additional information about new sightings.
Thank you.
Any other questions for staff?
I do just want to clarify, there was a referral sent to CDF, and in the staff report I outlined that there was no response because at the time that I put the staff report together, there was no response. Subsequent to that, we have received a response from CDF, and Rob wants me to add to the condition, which would be condition number 12, that, so just it would, this would be appended to that condition. And it would say that outlined in their letter dated March 3rd, 2005, this includes meeting all state licensing requirements for residential care facilities, including state fire marshal and local fire protection requirements.
Josh, I have a question. Many times a staff report will include an analysis on how a project is consistent with the general. I understand it's an existing use. How was it allowed as an existing use? I mean, was the land use designation changed? Was it a different land use designation originally? Or was it permitted within the ag land designation? Do you know the history on it? I'm just curious how this type of use was permitted in an ag designation.
A residential care facility serving six or fewer residents is allowed with zoning clearance in the agricultural land use category.
So it's allowed six or fewer?
Correct.
Okay. So six or fewer is allowed, but now we're allowing something that exceeds six or fewer.
And correct, and that's why we have a conditional use permit.
Right. So you can actually go beyond six or fewer in an ag designation with, okay, what's the maximum that's allowed then?
There really isn't a maximum. That's the purpose of the conditional use permit, is to evaluate on a case-by-case basis whether or not that particular use is appropriate. In this case, because the footprint wasn't expanding and the Ag Commissioner had no concern, really, about the expansion of the use to 12 people, that's why this is recommended for approval. But, for instance, if it was tripling in size, the structure itself was tripling or quadrupling in size, we may have gotten a different response from the Ag Commissioner, and they may have had concerns at that point with consistency with the ag, surrounding ag.
Okay.
So it's really the purpose of the conditional use permit.
Okay, so is the structure, the fact that the structure is not expanding, if they came in and looked at expanding the structure, potentially there will be some concerns about that?
Right, and you also have to take into consideration it's not in ag production right now. It's a 6.3-acre parcel. So from an ag viability standpoint, it might not be as significant of an impact as if it was in production and they were going to be taking land out of production to increase the size of the facility.
Well, I guess more of my concern is that I don't feel that that's an issue whether it's in production or not now. It could be in production in the future. It's a matter of paving over agricultural land. So I don't think that's an issue. I think at what point do we continue to allow our agricultural land to be converted? And I think that's the issue. How much more do we allow, and at what point do we allow what I perceive as incompatible ag uses on ag land? So, okay, thank you. Okay, Commissioner Rose?
I was just going to point out that we had another project, a brand new facility that was north of Paso Robles that came to your commission not too long ago. It was in an ag category. Again, the same situation, that with a conditional use permit, you can propose it. There we had a facility that I think was like 25 or 30 units,
yeah.
Brand new, not within an existing structure, and we raised concerns about do we want these uses to be occurring in outlying areas where no services are easily available. Right. Here, I think where it's an existing facility and it's internally within the building wasn't at such a level that it raised the same level of concern at staff.
I appreciate
it. I was kind of wondering, I recall that the Tucker project, and there were all these arguments that there wasn't near a responding agency, and we had reports from the emergency service providers and how quickly they could get there, and was this appropriate, and where are all those arguments for this project?
Yeah. Commissioner Rose, this is actually an area of primarily 10-acre lots in an area of antiquated subdivision and isn't as far out or in as productive of an ag area as that other request was. So this is kind of a unique site. It is closer in. It is in an area that's primarily developed with rural residences, although there is agriculture in the area, and that those underlying 5, 6, 10-acre parcels out there that were part of that antiquated subdivision.
I'll buy your ag productivity and antiquated subdivision argument, but I'm not buying the closer in. It's close to Creston, but I would suggest there's not a lot of services available in Creston.
Okay. Any other questions for staff? Okay. Anything else from staff? No? If not, we'll open the public hearing and ask the applicant to come forward, please.
Morning. My name is Dan Carcel. I'm a resident of San Luis Obispo. I really don't have anything to add, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions for the applicant? Okay.
Yeah. What level of care are you providing? The previous project that we were talking about, the one north of Paso, it was critical, at least I thought it was, the type of care that they're providing. So could you kind of describe what sort of person?
Right. Our facility is for people who have Alzheimer's disease. And everyone who is with us, we have a 24-hour care facility. We have staff awake all the time. And our understanding is that the response time, in fact, we've had people come out from the CDF from Creston, the response time is about 5 minutes. Nursing is licensed by the Department of Health. And we're licensed by the Department of Social Services. We are considered a non-medical care facility. What we are allowed to do is we are allowed to dispense medication, and that's about it. So we help our residents with the activities of daily living, which means we help people eat, get dressed, and because they have severe Alzheimer's, we have extra staff to help direct people if they're going to try to wander, which is another good reason why we're out there. But if somebody gets to the point where they needed a respirator or they needed medical care, they have to go either to skilled nursing, which has doctors on staff, which we don't, or to an acute care hospital like Twin Cities. And also, just since you're asking, that particular site, that building was built by a family called the Taylors back in 91. And they designed it to take care of, they had 6 developmentally disabled boarders that lived with them. And so they designed the home to take care of people like that. And the Taylors lived on one side, and they took care of the developing disabled adults on the other side. So it was originally built to do that. And I think they also had a license from Social Services. So I purchased it a year and a half ago, and we did an interior remodel, but essentially we've kept it for the same use and under the same licensing agency, which is Department of Social Services.
The interior remodel that you're going to do, you're going to be able to do that and still maintain your existing patient load without causing undue stress to those patients?
That's the way we designed it. The interior remodel, we actually planned this thing in 2 phases. So the first phase was completed a year ago, and that allowed for 6. The next phase that we want to do is going to take the garage area and another area that we're using as an office and just remodel them so that we can have more places to live there. But currently, between the garage and where the rest of the residents live, we have a solid wall so to separate noise and dust and issues like that.
Okay.
And
Would you like to say anything else? Respond? No?
No, thanks.
Okay, thank you. You'll have a chance to speak at the end of the hearing. Yes, sir.
Hi, Robert Lewin, Fire Marshal for the county. I need to add some information in line with what the applicant was talking about. When a facility increases its patients over six, it becomes a different type of facility under the eyes of licensing and the state fire marshal's office. This facility is going to require that they do some remodeling on the existing portion as well. They have to install sprinklers, and they have to have a different type of exiting. Actually, I think the exiting may have been required throughout. All rooms require two exits. So there will be some changes that will be required for the existing facility.
And that's all covered in your March letter?
Yes, and also the condition that Mr. LeBaum read into the record.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Is there anybody else that would like to speak on this item? Okay, no one else? Would you like to make any concluding remarks?
I'd just like to mention that we did anticipate that. So we've already, in the first phase of remodel, we sprinkled the entire building where the current residents live, and we've done everything necessary to be licensed at a higher level. So we have the doors installed and all those things. That way the current residents will not be impacted at all. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. We'll close the public hearing and bring it back to the commission. Any comments? Okay. Cammy and Josh, I just want to go back to the staff report a little bit, because it was unclear to me when I read the staff report. Now you've clarified it to me, but I'm just hoping that maybe in the future we can just to clarify, for at least for me, I don't know about the other commissioners, but when I read the staff report and you clarified, it was unclear to me whether there was going to be an expansion, and then you said there wouldn't be. But, for example, the subject matter says allow an expansion of an existing senior care facility, and then it talked about expanding it by 13,564 square feet to pay for parking and a driveway. Now, I think what you were saying is that they weren't going to, and I think you clarified it, that they weren't going to expand the structure, but they are going to expand and actually utilize more of the site. So they are going to use more of the site for pavement and the driveway. So in a sense, they are using more of the site. They're expanding it that way.
Correct.
But it's just the structure that they're not. So I just wanted to make sure I understood that. Okay.
Yeah, I had a similar problem. I was wondering, where are we doing it? And finally, I hit on page 1-4, condition 1, it says, through an interior conversion of an existing. So that's when I finally figured it out. But I agree with you. It was a little confusing. Yeah. Shouldn't there be more here?
Right. That's what I thought, too, when I read it. So maybe in the future, maybe we can do maybe a little bit more of an analysis to clarify what the project is and maybe how it's consistent with the general plan. In particular, when we have something that appears to be maybe, when you first look at it, maybe an increase.
Lost in the
right.
Ordinance provisions.
Right, right. You're right.
So.
Right, Cammy, you're right. Now, I feel bad that we were sitting here interrogating Josh, and I didn't mean to do that, so I hope
It's a good training experience.
Okay. All right, Josh.
Thanks, Pat.
Is this the first time you've been here? Have you been here
no.
before, Josh?
Yes.
This is your first time?
No, it's not.
It's not your first time. Okay. All right. Okay. All right.
Okay. And with that, I'm ready to make
just one minute. I think we have CDF that would like to say something.
I'm sorry. Robert Lewin, Fire Marshal. I did want to make a comment. You made a comment about emergency response. We do have a fire station in Creston. However, at this point, it isn't staffed 7/24. It's staffed during the 4 days a week during the daytime, and then it has a volunteer paid call firefighters at the other time. So there is a longer response time, but we did learn from the Tucker experience about that we wanted to come up with mitigations, and we hope that the licensing requirements and of the state will mitigate that longer response.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, do we have a motion?
I do. Prior to making it, I want to comment that at first brush, it doesn't seem like a logical place to put this. But then again, we're dealing with Alzheimer's patients out in the country. Perhaps may have a certain beneficial effect for them. I'm pleased to see that it's not a skilled nursing facility. Those sorts of facilities, in my opinion, belong much closer to rapid response times and services and doctors and that sort of thing. But this is a logical place for it in that it's a peaceful pastoral setting, more or less. And with that, I'll recommend, I move that we adopt the negative declaration in accordance with applicable provisions of CEQA and the Public Resources Code and approve the conditional use permit DRC 2004-00048 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B, and we modified Condition 12 to add the requirement of the CDF letter, as Josh read into the record.
Okay, we have a first. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
First and second. Any discussion? No discussion. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Malskow?
Yes.
Commissioner Rappa?
Yes.
Chairperson Alberto Blanc?
Yes. Thank you, Cammy. Thank you, Josh.
Madam Chair, before you go on, I was trying to catch Pat's eye to confirm, just for Commissioner Rose's benefit, I don't believe that skilled nursing care facilities are actually allowed in agriculture. So what you would see come forward in agriculture would be this type or this level.
You could have moved it a few feet and put it in residential rural.
That's true. Then it would be allowed. But I think that's the case, that it's those kinds of facilities should be in closer and aren't allowed.
Okay. We now move on to our second item. Lona, could you please introduce the next item?
Item number two is a hearing to consider a request by Cameron Realty Partners for a variance and coastal development permit to allow for grading on slopes over 30% and construction of a single-family residence, including decks and garage, and construction of road improvements. Residential single-family land use category, estero planning area, county file number D020302V, supervisorial district 2, James Caruso, project manager.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the commission. James Caruso, Department of Planning and Building. This is a request for a variance and a coastal development permit to allow construction of a single-family dwelling and grading on slopes over 30%. This project is on the Cayucas Hillside. Your commission has dealt with these variances before. This is project is located on the uphill side of Richard Avenue. Richard is the last street here on the south end of Cayucas, south of the of downtown. This is where the cemetery is up here. Rangeland up above the parcels. This is, as I mentioned, this is an uphill lot on Richard Avenue. I'm going to go through a little bit of a history on this project because it's interesting. Well, it's not interesting, but you should know. This started off, a variance was first approved in 1999. Mr. Steinman had several variances approved on this block. He was the owner of many of the lots on Richard Avenue, developed them one by one, two by two. This lot had a variance approved on it. Mr. Steinman, after getting the variance approved for a specific house, sold the property. Next owner made some small changes to the house, made some other changes to the house, sold it. Pretty soon, the house that the third owner wanted was, we could not find to be in substantial conformance with the approved variance. The house was much bigger. It was required more grading. Unfortunately, the owner started the grading while still, with a grading permit, I should say, while that house was still being redesigned. Here's the road. Here's the driveway. That pretty much tells you where things are going to zero out. You have to go from the road to the driveway. So this will be basically a big hole that's dug into the hillside to put the garage and then the first floor. Then the other floors are stacked up above it. As you can tell, look at all these contour lines on the grading plan. This is steep. This is Cayucas Hillside, uphill lot. Its areas of it are about 36% up here. Gets a little bit gentler in the middle, and then it gets steep again right at the beginning. This is the floor plan. This shows you how you get from the street into the driveway and then into the garage. This is what's called the lower level floor plan. The architect will talk in some detail about what's going on out here in front. You can see all these retaining walls here. There's some landscape features out here and some steps that come in outside the front setback. This is the elevations of the home. It's a large home. It's 5,000 square feet. Terraces on the first and second floor. Pretty much takes up most of the lot. These are the colors and materials that they're proposing to use. Here are some slides. We took these slides Tuesday. When was the big rainstorm in Cayucas that flooded everything? I chose a wonderful day to go up there. Here's the old grading that you see. That was started a couple of years ago. So you still see some of the orange fence. Here's the some of that grading. This is the street. This is Richard Avenue looking to the north. That looks like a lot of water going down the street. It's because it is a lot of water going down that street coming off of all of these lots. One of the parts of the project description, which is also is a little bit interesting, is that this owner is required to do road improvements from this lot all the way down the hill and across the and around the curve. That condition was placed by the Board of Supervisors on the previous variance, which was approved by your commission with road improvements. It was appealed to the board, and the board changed the road improvement requirement to require these improvements be done from the site north to, I believe, Oroville Avenue down there. Staff has placed those same road conditions on this variant, seeing how the board did it last time. We're just following suit. This is looking from the lot uphill. You can see several of them are for sale, and you can see how steep. This is steep stuff. This is Cayucas Hillside. But you can see how all of these uphill lots have been developed. They cut out a big notch, try to get your driveway down as far as you can so you don't have a steep driveway going in there and then go up from there. Quite a bit of drainage coming down here, and you can see there's no drainage facility in the road. It just sort of sheets over and then comes down here, causes problems as it comes around this curve and then heads on down. I don't remember seeing it Tuesday, but in the past, there are people with lots of sandbags on this downhill side of Richard because of this. We're hoping that the road improvement that's going to be done here would help that situation. I took this picture. Boy, you can see the rain coming down. This is a house that's just being completed now, another large house, uphill side of Cayucas, of Richard and on the Cayucas Hillside. Right over here, you can see their driveway goes up the hill a bit into the garage. This is an interesting looking house. These are the three issues that have been on haunting this project for 6 years now. First, of course, is geology. It's a steep hillside. It's somewhat unstable, and we'll talk about that in a minute. The road improvements are things that the neighbors in the area, the reason why they appealed that variance 6 years ago, they wanted to make sure the right, quote-unquote, road improvements were done in the right direction, and the board concurred and placed those road improvement requirements on that variance, and we're carrying them forward now. And the third issue is something that's cropped up on Richard Avenue especially, but in some of those other streets in Cayucas it happens. You saw Richard Avenue. It's narrow. There isn't a heck of a lot of parking because Richard Avenue is basically a notch in a hillside. So when you're building a home and you invariably have a lot of subcontractors and their trucks and their vehicles and their dogs and their radios, there has been a lot of angst in the community over the past 5 years or so as these large houses have been built. Contractors, subcontractors parking in the right-of-way, parking in people's driveways. We get calls all the time about these nuisance factors that have to do constructing a residence on a very constrained site. So a couple of variances ago, we gave a shot at some conditions. And I decided we were going to try them again. And we placed the applicant about what their the geology findings have been so far. I do not know. I have not spoken to the county geologists for probably a month or so when this issue first came up. We'd like to hear from the applicant to see how extensive he believes the problem is, or this new problem is. Remember, we know this is a steep, somewhat unstable hillside. We've developed the standard mitigation for Richard Avenue uphill lots. However, this landslide is something new, which we're not sure we have completely addressed, and be interested to hear the testimony today. So with that will conclude staff comments. We recommend approval of the ND and the variance at this point, However, we're listening with open ears also today.
Any questions?
Mr. Caruso, I have a question. You said the road in Richard will be improved to, my map shows it runs into Obispo and then...
That's what it is, Obispo.
To Obispo?
Right, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Orville Obispo.
Can I clarify, at the curve it changes names and becomes Obispo, but the improvement actually has to extend on Obispo until it reaches the next cross street, which is Orville.
Oh, that's where Orville comes.
So that's where the two come in.
Okay. Thank you.
They both begin with O.
So the old street, one of the old streets.
Right.
Okay. Both of the old streets. James, I have a question. And it's on, when we have a project like this and there's grading that begins, does the county require a bond when a grading permit is issued to make...
No.
We don't require it.
No, we don't.
So somebody can go out and begin grading, and if they don't complete the grading, it just sits there.
Right. In this particular case, the building department asked the contractor, when informed us that he was walking away or the owner, to button the site up. And they did a job adequate enough to get our grading inspector to buy off on that several years ago.
Okay, but it seems like there have been subsequent problems. I think in particular where you have a known... geologically sensitive area, somebody comes in, begins grading, and there are subsequent rains, additional geologic problems, and you have landslide erosion problems, and there's no one can do anything about the problem, right? And so it affects other properties, it affects the roadways, and there's no money available to do anything because the county doesn't collect a bond. And I guess, Pat, I'm going to ask you, or maybe Richard, maybe even county council, is there any discussion about potentially asking people to post bonds on situations like this?
I don't think that question has come up before, and if the commission thinks that it's something we should look into, we could report back to you. I'm not aware that that's a requirement in most places, because it's not a problem most of the time. Help me understand what you think we would have been able to do differently had we had a bond.
I think what you would do is at least go ahead, if you have a bond, before you, at the time that you issue a grading plan, if somebody doesn't complete the grading and they walk away from a piece of property, that at least you can either complete the grading or at least go ahead and install enough erosion control provision so that if there is a heavy rain, that there isn't a problem with when the rains come with additional erosion problems that affect adjacent properties, or if you have a landslide problem like you have here, that it's not going to hopefully get worse. Because I think, you know, appears to have been a problem here. And I think this, so at least the county has some money through the bonding process.
In general, that would be true. However, in this case, if we had a bond, if the county had a bond, what would the county do with it? The county would not complete the grading. The grading is for a house that apparently no one was going to build. What the bond would be for would be to quote unquote button up the site for the winter time, make sure that the erosion sedimentation control are in place. And that basically happened on this site. I do want to point out that the landslide on the site, I don't think has any. Well, I'm not a geologist, but I don't think it has anything to do with the grading. This landslide starts way up further up the hill than where the grading occurred.
There should be something, however, James. We had a geotechnical report prepared on this site. There was a geology report prepared on this site. I would hope that at the time the county approved those and the county geologist reviewed those reports, there would have been some mitigation measures included in those geology reports. So if something like this happened, we could have addressed those issues. You know, I would hope, and if it wasn't, that maybe we need to rethink how we're looking at those geology reports, at least to be proactive about it in case it happens again. I mean, how are we going to address these issues in the future if somebody begins grading and they walk away from the grading and this happens again? I guess what I'm saying is there should be something.
It was done in this case. It was could have been because the rainy season was approaching and they wanted to get the grading done before the October 15th date. In retrospect, of course, probably was not Well, in retrospect, it didn't work out.
Well, that's okay. But is it now the practice of planning and building to issue those two? They're actually incorporated together.
99.9% of the time, that's going to happen.
So maybe we don't need to worry about this issue.
Well, I'm certainly not going to think the same way about it the next time someone wants to do it.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for staff?
Yeah, I had one for Richard here on 271, your referral and your comments down there. Last thing you say, may require a retention basin to avoid impacts to neighbors, and obviously you haven't done your exhaustive drainage calculations, and you won't until this thing is approved, if in fact it is approved. But how would that work? If it turns out you need a drainage basin, where would we put that thing?
Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. That would have to be accommodated on the site somewhere. I think it's a very low probability, but it's not zero, so we wanted to let the applicant know to have that in mind as they begin their drainage study.
Well, I went there yesterday. It wasn't raining, but there was water just a pouring off of the middle of it down into that middle of that previously excavated area. Now, the similar subject, Richard Avenue, the improvements that get made to that, will they have some sort of drainage consideration, a gutter or a channel or something?
Absolutely. I anticipate that the street will include a gutter, a curb and gutter of some sort to convey the drainage. And if the street can convey the drainage all the way essentially down to the bottom of the hill, then retention on site won't be needed. That's what we anticipate. But there's been a few places in the neighborhood where the only place to release the drainage is downhill through somebody else's private property. And that's typically more the case on sites that are on the downhill side of these roads. So we're trying to let people know that this is one of the concerns of the area. I don't expect it to be a concern of this particular site.
Okay, then the next item I had was by my little tab here. Condition 4 on page 27, the applicant should provide a planning and building with a fire safety plan approved by Cayucas. But Cayucas wanted fire sprinklers, as they said on their referral on page 269, as well as they wanted Richard Avenue to be accepted by the county, and I'm not sure that'll happen. Or they can require that, but certainly they could require fire sprinklers, and shouldn't that be in here somewhere? Although yeah. I understand you're going to have to make them happy, and it'll occur anyway, but
we could add the phrase including fire sprinklers to make that pretty much putting the applicant on notice, I suppose, that fire sprinklers will be required.
Okay, so we'll revise condition 4 to add the fire sprinklers.
Right at the end of that sentence, correct.
I'd like to point out that once the improvement of the street is completed to our standard, we will be able to accept it for county maintenance and have done so with a portion that was constructed by similar development at the other end of the block.
So you're working your way up the block, trying to get it all.
We're working from both ends toward the middle.
Okay. And as we do that, more and more drainage, you're going to get better about taking the drainage. What are we thinking about the people downstream? The drainage that's coming off the existing lots goes to the street, but I would suggest not as effectively as it will once Richard Avenue is improved. So what about downstream? What have we considered that, or is that a goes right into some sort of drainage channel right away, or
the basic drainage design for the neighborhood is the water drains to the streets and the streets carry it down to the bottom of the hill where there are some drainage facilities. It's not a 100% perfect system, and certainly this week's storms helped us demonstrate that, but The goal is once it gets to the street, then it doesn't go back onto other people's property, and that's what the road improvement design should accomplish.
We'll open the public hearing and ask the applicant to come forward.
Hello, Madam Chair and Planning Commission. My name is Scott Smavy. I'm their architect for the Cameron Financial Group. We have some slides here to show you. Just a little background of what I do. I'm kind of an expert on hillside construction. All my projects are usually on very steep hillsides. I work with geologists and soils engineers all the time for these kind of projects. Okay, so I have a kind of a knowledge of these kind of type structural projects. This is what we're proposing for the site. It was approved for a variance for another house. I'll show you drawings of it. It was a pretty bad design. It didn't meet setback requirements. It didn't meet height requirements. The driveway was on the other side, on the high side of the lot, where there's a telephone pole and utility pole box, which I don't know how the other architect could get the driveway even through it. We flipped the plan, dug it in deeper, so our driveway is relatively flat for a cayuca, because that's on a hillside. It's pretty rare. We've also set it back further than the other project was, and we've articulated the facade so that the floors, it's three stories, but it steps back every floor with a veranda on every floor with arches so that the shadows and the color will not make it look so massive compared to some of the other houses on the hillside. We've tried to do that. Here's a view of the model. This is a 3D model set in the site with the house next door. You can see how we're right equal with it. The right side of the lot front is very steep, and again, on this model, we don't show the telephone pole or the pole boxes, but there's guy wires and all sorts of stuff there that's very difficult to grade around. That is the reason we were retaining the front entryway there, not to disturb that, one, because it's very difficult because of the utilities that are there, two, I think it would look nicer to landscape that so it diminishes the size of the project. Here's a view looking up Richard Street, and you can see how we've dug it in, and from the high side, when you look down from Richard Street, we have another model show you, it only looks like a two-story building. We've taken great care to articulate the elevations to make it not look so massive like some of the other projects that are on the hillside up there. Here's a view looking down the street at it. And here's a view looking from up above. You'll see that on the site plan, there is a curved wall in the back. We were able to grade the backyard out using 4 to 5 foot retaining wall stack so that we don't have a big, massive 10 foot, 12 foot retaining wall to grab a backyard for them. And it also helps with the drainage. The drainage will come down, and my civil engineer designed a drainage plan to divert the water around the house to the high side and get it out to the street to help with this drainage problem that we have out there. These are the left one is the one that was approved previously planned. The right one is our proposed. You can see how we have moved the building back. We've dug it in a little deeper, and I think it'll be less impact on the street. This is the elevations of the existing approved before we got it. And you can see it's a three-story building, very massive, not very much articulation to the facade of it. Here's our elevations. You can see with the verandas, it lines some horizontal lines in it, breaks down the mass of it, and it does step back. And then here's the side view of it, so you can see the side sections, how it does step back in the front, both elevations. There was some issues in the, I think, the Cayucas report about encroaching into the setback and into the right-of-way. These are pictures of other projects down the street that have retaining walls and planting and rocks and stuff in the setback and in the right-of-way to the street. So what we're proposing is not inconsistent with the rest of the projects on the street. Just some examples of different retaining walls, different landscaping. Our site has quite a large distance between the actual property line and the street. A lot of them, the property lines are very close to the street, are set back probably 10 to 15 feet. So we have to do something with that to get the driveway, and we have to grade it. A lot of times what you'll do is you'll grade it out and fluff it out. On ours, we don't have the really the opportunity to do that because we have a telephone pole in that utility box. Once you start grading, these things start coming out of the ground. And so we thought it best just to dig a channel into the driveway and then retain both sides out to the street. And here's some other retaining walls that are in the utility easement. As far as the geological portion of it, my client has hired a geologist with a neighboring project to work together to look at this geological problem they found out there. It appears that the ranch above them, some of the land is sliding down the hillside. It is sliding on the neighbor's property. It's not sliding on our property. And they are in the process of getting geological reports right now for that. The ranch owner on the high side where the problem is occurring is not being very willing to work with them. And so that's kind of where that stands geologically. There has been some engineering done on the neighbor's side of how to
A new geology report that addresses your site.
Yes, there will be one. They're working on it right now.
Okay, so there's a new geology report that addresses your site, and it's being worked on now, so you haven't submitted it to the county yet.
No, we don't have it yet.
This
came about 3 or 4 weeks ago when James called me when the county geologist went out and saw there might be a potential problem with the water running up, and so they hired the geologists and soils engineers to go out and start evaluating and see what to do with it. What we would like to do is ask for approval of this project based on whatever recommendations the geologist comes up with.
Which geologist?
The geologist for the whatever the county approves as far as what needs to be taken with the geological portion of this project.
Okay, but the county geologist hasn't seen the report yet?
No.
Okay. And so it's typically the county geologist that reviews the geology reports, and John, I'm going to ask you what the county process is. Typically.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, I'm John Null, your principal environmental specialist. Typically, what happens in the coastal zone is the applicant is responsible for having a report prepared by a qualified geologist. We take that report, and our county geologist then reviews that for adequacy. If it's inadequate, our county geologist points out where it's inadequate, and it's then expected to be made adequate. So the county geologist has not seen the report that is evidently under preparation now, and he will need to at some point. I believe peer review is required in the coastal zone.
It is. And, John, I've got to go back to page 242, and this is the initial study. And in the initial study on this project, it talks about that there is this is within the geologic study area.
That's correct.
And it references an engineering geology report in 1999, and there's a new geology report that's coming out that's not referenced in this initial study.
That is correct. Evidently, we have new information.
You have new information. Does the initial study need to be updated?
Yes, I believe it does, depending on the results of the geology report. We don't know what those results are going to be, so we'll have to wait and see.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. Commissioner Rose, that's all that I have.
I'd like somebody to explain the difference between this site and those newsworthy ones lately with La Conchita. What assurance do we have that we don't have that sort of a situation here? How is this hillside different?
Well, we don't know yet because we don't have a geological report yet. But by looking at the topography, it's a lot less slope site and less height than the La Conchita. La Conchita is very steep and very tall. It's a different kind of a geological area.
What about the depth to bedrock? I see you were digging out, maybe not you, but somebody else was digging out one further south on Richard Avenue, and looks like they really went back in and putting some walls in. Do you end up going into the bedrock there? Is that typical in that hillside?
It depends on what the soils report comes back at. Again, they have a geological report. We haven't gotten that far along to look at the soils recommendations.
Well, we got the old one of 99.
And we haven't done the foundation design and all that yet. We're still in the schematic design of this project. I mean, reviewing the soils report and that, it doesn't seem to be a problem with this site. I don't know how far we're going to go into bedrock. I don't know where it is right now. We get more into that when we start doing the working drawings and engineering on the project.
Am I right in assuming that the house does have to be anchored to it, either directly or you put in some piers to get it down there?
Yes, there's various ways of doing a foundation system. If you've got bedrock, either high into it, you can run pylons down. And that's all based on the soils engineer and the structural engineering requirements and recommendations.
Any other questions? Is there anybody else from your team that would like to speak?
No.
No? Okay. You'll have an opportunity to
make
some concluding remarks. I have a couple of people who would like to speak. First person I have is Douglas Burton.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Douglas Burton, and I live and reside at and own the property immediately adjacent to the proposed single-family dwelling. That would be northwest. The first thing I want to say is that I'm encouraged by the development because I've lived next door to a gash, an open sore in the hillside for about 2.5 years since it was first graded, with the plastic orange moves downhill, as of course it would. And it backed up against the side of my house, and it's really, it's past the point that I can keep up with it with a shovel. It has stacked up against the stucco, and I'm concerned about dry rot. So I just want to be sure that that concern is addressed with both the property and the soil, that the new house will somehow channel the water more effectively and prevent that normal erosion of just an open hillside. The other things that I've observed over the 5 years that I've lived there is that during the rainy season, what appears to be an underground spring that was, I believe, originally a reservoir up on the ranch above Richard, during the rainy season, that underground spring comes above the ground, and it's real visible. So if you've been up there lately, you'd see it flowing. The original grading that was done did have some provisions for drainage, and they worked for about 1.5 years, and those have collapsed. So I'm real anxious to get the drainage problem handled, because currently the side of my house and my little 2-foot garden wall is channeling most of the water down that hill. Thank you.
Any questions, Commissioner Rose?
The stuff that going against your house, that sort of muddy-like stuff, normally erosion products, would you suggest?
Right. It's basically loose dirt from the grading to level off the pad right above. I believe Stuart Selkirk, who is my contractor, has some photographs that picture's worth 1,000 words.
The underground spring, I was by there yesterday, and it looked like it was draining from the hillside into the middle of the excavated area. Is that what you're talking about? It was a pretty steady stream yesterday.
Right, and that always comes down into the street. Ever since I've lived there, it's come into the street and flowed down the street. It's just a matter of channeling it. But I do believe that it's underground most of the year.
Did you notice that problem before the grading occurred?
Which problem?
The erosion problem. Did you notice it before the grading occurred?
No, I'd lived there maybe a couple years before the grading, and the grading built up the front of the property, raised the height of the front of the property and it's probably different on the new plans, but the old plans raised up the front of the property, and so it just came downhill as it would.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much. Any other questions? No. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Stuart Shelkert.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, I have some photographs here that I'll
state your name, please.
Oh, I'm Stuart Shelkert. Sorry.
Right, thank you.
Resident of Cayucas. These photographs are absolutely better than the sound. Yeah. Put them on the over. These photographs, to you, probably looking at them at the desk, are a little better than the county's, a little more detail. They were taken from the top of Dr. Burton's house. I'm kind of encouraged by the design of the house next door in that it will be below the Burton house and will help a lot with this water that seems to come through over and under the retaining walls that we've got. We had to turn the driveway that we put in for Doug into a big French drain with geofabric and gravel and interlocking pavers down at the end so the water can get out as it goes. As to the history of this slide area, I've lived here all my life, kind of watched that thing over the years, and I believe it was, as I've heard, that it was an ancient slide, and there are houses out in front of it on the other side of Richard that have been built on top of this. And this current thing that's sliding here is probably a result of the combination of water and the cutout there, but there's the overburden up above on the Dunn property is moving on down, and it's not on the adjacent lot. It's on this lot and the adjacent lot. And I just hope that engineers, architects, and everybody really address this kind of thing so they can prevent it from pushing this house on down into Doug's house. I really do have a lot of concern that there needs to be a lot of oversight in terms of geotechnical and hydraulic expertise. So thank you.
Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Dick Weiss, and then Mary Ann Carnegie.
Three or four times, it's not an easy area in which to construct things. My primary concern of being here is to make sure that we retain that condition to have the road brought down to Orville Avenue. Without going into the personalities, the history of all of this, it's been a terrible situation, but we're glad that that was imposed by the commission back in the year 2000. And hope that you keep that condition in there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay. Thank you. Mary Ann Carnegie and then Ed Carnegie.
Good morning. I'm Mary Ann Carnegie, and I'm chairman of the Land Use Committee for the Citizens Advisory Council in Cayucas. I have a couple of concerns. The first one, it's been clarified, and I'm glad to see that on the road improvements, that because where it says it's 3,450 square feet, that's only approximately 172 feet of road right-of-way. So taking it down to the Obispo-Oroville intersection to clarify that and make sure that that's taken, that's great. We also appreciate that James put in on the construction phase the various points there regarding parking, legally, music, and pets. We also have another concern from based on the previous project that this particular contractor had done, that if you would work more closely with the neighbors by A, giving us a contact number that we could call the contractor instead of the county all the time, because at times there were 18 to 20 cars there, the road was closed 2 to 3 times a week, and we were never notified, and we'd end up being stranded, or deliveries had to be rearranged. So if we could just get a phone number to better cooperate between the working condition and the neighbors, that would be very much appreciated, and especially because we have another project at the other end of Richard that we know its construction equipment will be coming in, that we could end up being closed on both sides, and then the middle people are stuck. We also want to discuss the road right-of-way in that, yes, there are some fences and work done. Those homes were built over 20 years ago. That's when a 5-foot setback was there. Since then, there's several buildings that have gone up. As you can see, the road becomes highly impacted, and we just feel that the more things that are not in the road right away, it actually provides more parking for company, July 4th weekend, all these things when the road is impacted more than ever. And by having plants, walls and such in the road right away, it then means that parking takes place on the road, and on a 20-foot wide road, if it's on both sides, it makes it extremely difficult for an emergency vehicle to come down the center of the street at any time, let alone normal traffic. My other discussion is on the planning standard, where you do talk about the setbacks, and we've brought this up before, and at any time when there's a discussion or a discrepancy in a setback and you go to the land use ordinance, it's described throughout the Estero Area Plan as well as in the coastal zone land use ordinance that any time there's a conflict, the local Estero area plan always will take precedence. The precedence is that we have a 10-foot setback, and I don't think we should allow any hard impediments or other things in that setback. And I don't understand how we can approve a project when we don't have a full geological project report without the public having some input once that report is out, and it concerns their neighborhood and the possibility, as Mr. Rose had said, for a La Conchita, that I think until we get the full geological study and the neighbors have had an opportunity to review it, that it should be on hold. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Ed Carnegie, please.
Hello. My name is Ed Carnegie. I live at 2689 Richard Avenue with my wife. I have some real concerns about the soil stability. We sent a series of pictures to the planning department taken about a month and a half ago that shows the soil movement to the south of this property. And in my opinion, that is caused by the big hole that was dug in this property and left for quite a few years. If you look down in the hole, you can see recent sediment, and I'm sure, Bob Ross, you saw that sediment coming in there. The sheer bank that was to the north or to the south of that hole is no longer a sheer bank. And if you look at the property to the south, there's one place that the entire area, about 20 feet by 40 feet, has dropped 4 feet in elevation. And there's a sheer drop. If you look at the soil, you see shear planes, distinct shear planes that the soil is moving. I think until we get some stabilization in that, we are jeopardizing the properties to the south of this particular program, or to particular house. The road says it needs to be built, another subject, the road says it needs to be to 20 feet. If you go down and measure the area around that curve between where Obispo and Richard meet, the road is somewhere between 20 to 22 feet. So the road could get narrowed if it is only built to 20 feet. Allowing impediment
project by having it graded out properly, retaining walls put in the right places, designing a drainage system to get the water to the street, that can all be resolved, and we've looked at that. As far as some of the water springing from out of the site and from other sites, I've done a lot of work on hillsides with springs. If we get a good geological engineer out there, we look at the strata. Once they do their borings, we design a system to take the water out of the ground and get it out to the street so it's not bubbling out of driveways and through retaining walls and all that. So that's an easy remedy. As far as the hillside goes, the geological movement, we have to wait till we get the geological reports back to see what they recommend. And that's where we are on that. As far as the parking issue of stuff in the easement and the right-of-way, everybody down the street has stuff in the right-of-way. We have a telephone pole, guy wires, and a big utility box there. We can't even grade in it, let alone anybody can park off the road. It's very steep, and we have these utilities there where nobody could park anyway. So the street is pretty much limited to parking on the street, unless you gouge out and retain it, which I don't think we have the opportunity to do because all the utilities that are there already. As far as the front setback, we are allowed, I've talked to James about building a staircase in the setback. It is not part of the house. It is an access way to the front. It would be very difficult to do it any other way. We'd have to push the house back farther into the lot and dig deeper into the lot. And so I think our solution works very good. We've tried to minimize the impact of the site, make it very pleasing to the street, hide it, as you would say, and it's in within our rights to build that staircase within the setbacks.
Okay, any questions?
How many more lots are there left to develop on this street?
Oh, I don't know. There's one next door that's going up. There's a new project going up down the street, and I would say, I don't know the street that well. I would say half a dozen maybe or more.
Thanks.
Any other questions?
Yeah, back to what's being built in the right-of-way. Could you put up a plan and kind of explain where the road right-of-way is?
How about if we
We can go back from the 3D model in the site plan. That'd probably be so you see it in
Yeah, I like 3D. That works for me.
Which one?
I don't know which one it is. Second or third one? First, second, third.
Oh, sorry.
I thought you could see that.
And while he's...
Maybe that one right there would be good.
Sure.
Well, let's go over to the plan first, and then they can revert back to the model, because it's kind of hard in the model. Okay, go to the next one that shows our site plan. That's bigger. One more. Oh, maybe we don't have it. Okay.
I don't think so.
We'll go back. Okay.
I think that's it.
If ours is on the right side, and I know it's hard to see, but you can see that there's a dark line. Okay, that's the property line. The lighter line above it is the setback line. Okay, we have aprons, or what they call them aprons or wing walls on a driveway. There are about 3-foot retaining walls that go down to zero that just hold the dirt back in the right-of-way so that we can get a driveway through it.
Oops, sorry.
Here, right here.
You got to be on the microphone here.
Oh,
we got these high-tech tools.
All right. How do you turn it on?
Red button.
Okay. Right there, you see, is the what's in the encroachment area of the right-of-way. Okay.
Now, where is this utility pole?
Okay, there's the utility pole. There's a guy wire. There's a guy wire. And there's a pull box. So it's very difficult to do any grading in this area. And it's very steep right here anyway. So what we've done is taken this retaining wall that comes around and just daylight it into the street till it goes to zero, just to hold back the dirt. And if you flip to one of the... Go back further to the pictures of the one down the street.
That I had or you had?
No, that I have. Just keep going. With that one right there. If you see, they've done the same thing right here. And right here. And that's the only way you can hold that dirt back. Otherwise, you have to grade it back, and then it starts sloughing down in the driveway again. And we only have, you know, one side a 3 or 5 foot setback. It's very difficult to grade in that. On the other side, it's difficult to grade because we have the power pole and the utility box there. And compared to the driveway, it's probably 3-4 feet higher than the driveway. So if we start grading, we're digging it out of the ground, then we've got to do something with it. Go back to the plan then. Okay. And then here's the setback line right here. And you see there's the building line that's well out of the setback. We proposed the staircase to come up and around, and this is on natural grade. Okay, it's like concrete steps on natural grade. It's not a deck. It's just dug into the hillside to get from.
Any other questions?
Would you object if we add a condition 16D to include a contact number so these construction issues could be dealt with more locally rather than waking up the county every day?
Oh, no, that should be fine. That's pretty common practice in construction, so I don't think there'd be a problem with that.
And I presume this would be a manned phone, not a answering machine? Obviously would be a name.
Yeah, typically you get the general contractor's cell phone number, so you can pretty much get a hold of them, or the owner's number.
Any other questions? Thank you very
much. Thank
you. Okay. Now close the public hearing and bring it back to the Planning Commission for a decision.
I have a philosophical question. How do the... it seems to me like we have a problem here. We got the drainage issue, the drainage plan, which has not been done yet because we don't know what the approved house will look like yet until we take some action. And then the neighbors care about that. Especially the fellow just downhill is obviously going to care quite a bit about it. And the geologic report, which evidently there's some new things happening, and so it's going to take some time. How does the public see those? How do they get to say, oh, my gosh, this is not a good thing, or this? I support this?
So is this going to be a philosophical discussion? This is great. I love these types because I can't be wrong. Madam Chair, Commissioners, this is a classic discussion that you have in planning and building. And I'll be frank, so we don't have to talk around the subject. Developers don't want to do a whole heck of a lot of work up front. That's just it. You know, you can't put a lot of money up front into a project until you know you have a project, until your commission approves a project. Then they're free to go ahead and spend their money to do all the final plans. We, however, on the other side of the table, we're constantly pushing people. We need more information, more information, more information. Get us a drainage plan, grading plan, construction plans. Meanwhile, the owner is saying, no, let's wait until later. Let's do preliminary plans. Let's do conceptual plans. Let's get you enough information that your decision makers and your staff basically know what's going on, but the detail work is going to wait until the building permit. We're caught in that, well, not caught, but we have that situation not only today on this project, but on most projects that are going to have some type of construction phase. It never ceases to, I've been doing this for a long time, it never ceases to amaze me that when you start doing the detailed plans for, a building permit or for road improvements, all of a sudden you discover all those things that you thought were you could do, well, they're becoming more and more difficult to do, and perhaps we lose sight of some of the things that we discussed during the planning phase, just because when the rubber meets the road and the engineer or the architect is designing things on the ground, they don't work all of a sudden, or they have to work a different way. Your question is, how does the public know? Well, it's the end of the public hearing. It's the end of the public process. There's no more hearings. There's no more notices. There's no more things on the website. These are all the technical work that goes on between the owners, architect or engineer, and the building department plan checker. Individuals can involve themselves in that process. They're still public records. They're still free to call the building department and say, can I come in and take a look at the grading plan for this project? Some people do it. Matter of fact, in my little part of the world, in Avila Beach, where I do quite a bit of work for the department, people do that a lot because they've learned that they have a specific plan in Avila Beach. But they've learned that the specific plan is not as specific as they would like. It's very general language, and when you get things that are designed to the design to the construction level, they don't always work out the way they thought. So we often have people from different parts of the county coming in, calling up and saying, can we take a look? Some advisory councils have said they actually want building permit applications to go to them for review and approval. And the department has historically always said, no, these are ministerial permits. They're not part of the public review process. So there's a way of handling it. It's not going to be very efficient. It's something that the people who are interested in those issues have to keep up on. They have to keep contacting us to know what phase of development the project is in. They have to be proactive. It reminds me of the old story of if you live down below a dam, well, you don't need state-paid dam inspectors. You should go up there and inspect the dam yourself, seeing how you're living below it. If you have drainage issues, if you have a lot of concerns about your house and the construction project next door, involve yourself. Involve yourself in the process. Come to the hearings. Call the plan checker. Keep in contact with the department to find out when the building plan
study. And until we have the geology study that's reviewed and approved by the county geologist, I don't think we can take action on this project. So I'm going to recommend that we continue this item until that's accomplished. Additionally, I am going to ask staff, at the time to return with the amended conditions that we talked about today, which includes amendments to condition 4 regarding fire sprinklers. We talked about an amendment to condition 15B that Richard recommended, in addition to 16D regarding contact information. I think those were the additional ones. I'd also would ask staff to come back. I'd like to have staff look at or provide a discussion regarding encroachments within the right-of-way. I think we've heard some discussion from both the applicant's representative and from the community about the advantages and disadvantages about encroaching within the right-of-way, and I haven't made my mind up on that one way or the other, but I'd like to go ahead. There may be some advantages to it, may not be. I'm not sure. But that's basically my feeling. I do have one concern about the size of the house and if there needs to be some type of retention pond or detention pond on the site. Richard is saying that there may not be, but I have concern, or maybe we need to go ahead and just stress to the applicant that if that happens, the project would have to come back to the Planning Commission, would have to be amended, and would have to come back. So I'm going to make that motion, but I also want to go ahead and make a statement that I do, I think as you're looking at the geology report, and maybe it's something that planning staff can look at, and I got to get back to the issue about grading, and I feel strongly about bonding for some of these grading plans. I got to get back to this issue. I don't care if we issue a building permit with it or not. There are certain provisions that we can do that the geologists can look at, geotechnical engineering geologists can look at, that if you cease grading in the middle of a project and you go away, that you can do, that there are certain engineering procedures that you can incorporate so that you don't end up with problems that somebody stops grading, so that you don't have, if there's water problems later on, drainage problems or erosion problems, that you can incorporate. If you have bonding, that you can incorporate that. And I'm just hoping that maybe as staff can look at that and incorporate that in the initial study somehow, John. I don't know. Maybe it's just something you can look at and talk to Lou Rosenberg about, or whoever the county geologist is in the future at the time. So I'm going to make a recommendation that we continue this item until the new geology report is submitted and the initial study is amended, and then re-advertise the project. Return it to the Planning Commission.
So that would be an off-calendar?
That would be off-calendar.
One option would be to continue to a date certain.
I don't know. Do we have a particular date? And
Madam Chair, I'm going to recommend that you continue it to a date uncertain.
Uncertain?
Yes, because we would like to coordinate that date so that the county geologist can be here.
Okay.
On that day.
And then we re-advertise?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's continue to not a date certain, but it will be re-advertised.
Right.
Depending on what happens with the geology report, the ND might have to be modified and then circulated again. There's time. It's tough to know whether 3 months of a continuance would be adequate, 2 or 4, so perhaps to a date uncertain is the right way to go.
Okay. That's my motion. So I have a motion. Do I have a second? Did you say something? Or no? Okay, I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Sure, I'll second it. I'm a bit reluctant to, but I think we need to discuss a little bit more. But I am going to support the motion because normally these, I have confidence in the process that once a geology report comes out that we can, in fact, the staff and the architects will come together on the right method of how deep to put the footings and that sort of thing. But we have a larger issue here. You know, the hillside looks like it's, you know, slumping down. Is that just topsoil or is that a deeper thing? We really don't know. I suspect that if it does, and I don't know what it would or not, but if it turned out to be a very serious issue, then this project goes off through another sale and resale and another plans. So I think the smart thing to do is to get that detail, get that level of detail, so we can have a project that would, in fact, go forward when it we have all this information.
Thank you. Any discussion?
I've got a question. Date uncertain, is that the same as off calendar?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Means there will be, when this comes back, it will be a brand new public hearing. This.